This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Jason Arnott. Jason, good afternoon. Thanks very much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
First of all, Jason, congratulations on your career in its entirety. If you had said when you started that you'd last 20 years in the NHL, I'm sure you would have taken that, no questions asked.
No question. Just to have the opportunity to play in the NHL is a dream come true and an honor. And to play that long, yeah, it was definitely a blessing.
Jason, obviously drafted in the first round in 1993, seventh overall by the Edmonton Oilers. What was it like to walk into that organization, given that they had just won five Stanley Cups in the course of a decade?
Well, it was. I still remember watching them as a kid. Their dynasty that they had there was an amazing thing they did, accomplished as a team. How many Stanley Cups they had won. And the great players that had played there, and to go in there for my first year was such an exciting time for me, and just to see the history and the culture of the Edmonton Oilers, it was just a fantastic place for me to start off my career, and I thank that organization a lot and Glenn Sather for giving me that opportunity.
You know, Jason. Us here in Winnipeg, we lose the Jets in 1996, so a lot of fans kind of pointed their attention to the Edmonton Oilers, and I want to point your attention to a specific series that your team had in 1997. That was against the Dallas Stars, which is one of the best series, I think, front-to-back that I've ever watched, you know, down to the Buckberger goal down the right wing in that comeback game, and of course, Todd Marchand's goal in Game 7. Can you talk about that series and that playoff? That was your first NHL playoff experience. What was that like?
Oh, it was incredible, especially when you play in their rink in the playoffs here in Dallas. It's really, really exciting. But man, the fans in Edmonton were 100% there and loud, and the feeling you got when you got on that ice the first time during the playoffs, the goosebumps. It was just incredible, and for us to how underdog we were against the Dallas Stars to go out there and upset them was the city just erupted and it brought just kind of a little bit of new life back into the city after all those cups they won and missing the playoffs for so many years. It was just an amazing time and a great learning experience for myself being in the playoffs for the first time, just to see how hard it really is and how much different and the level of play, how it elevates that much more getting into the playoffs and trying to win the cup.
You know, Jason, you played the next half season with the Oilers, and then you were traded to the Devils for Billy Guerin, among others. I think Zelopukin was in that trade, too. When you were traded, how surprised were you to be traded, and how big of a culture shock was it for you to go to Edmonton from Edmonton to New Jersey?
Well, it was majority of it was my decision to be traded. I kind of went in and talked to Glenn a little while during that season and just told him that I was having a rough time and I was getting pretty frustrated and just kind of down on myself. And we talked it over a few times about moving on and getting a fresh start. So at the end of it, it was basically my decision. So I knew it was coming. And so it wasn't much of a shock when it happened. Glenn sent me to a place that I had a chance to win the Stanley Cup, and I thank him for doing that for me. He was fantastic through the whole thing, and it was a different culture change, no question, going from the Oilers to the Devils. They had an older team, experienced team, guys that have won before, and Lou was just had that thing about him where every year he wanted to put a team on the ice to compete for the Stanley Cup because he knew what he had. So, it was sad to leave Edmonton, but it was a great time for my career to to resurrect my career and ultimately winning the Stanley Cup, which was fantastic.
Jason, when I look back on your career and I think of all of the line mates that you've played with, the line that always comes back to me is the early 2000s and the line you played with Patrick Elias and Peter Sikora, and you guys scored a lot of goals and you guys stuck together for several years there. What made that line so successful?
Well, we just, for one, we really enjoyed playing with each other, and we all brought different aspects to the game. Even though they were two European players, they still were different in styles, and we all brought different things to the game. We could all talk to each other and you know, argue and get mad at each other, but, you know, we put that aside and move forward as a line, and that's how you grow as a line. And we just became one whole unit and had a lot of fun playing with each other and just fed off of each other. And, you know, good things happened. And you just create that chemistry that you can't explain. It's just there and you just roll with it.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, online at tsn1290.ca. We're joined by Jason Arnott, who retired earlier this week after a successful 20-year NHL career. Jason, obviously, I mean, every kid that grows up as a hockey fan grows up dreaming of scoring the game-winning goal in the Stanley Cup Final. You had that, you had the ability to do that, first and foremost. Can you take us back to that play where you scored that goal, and what do you remember occurring on the ice that led to you scoring that goal?
Well, I still remember it vividly, like it was yesterday, and I can still remember I was in the penalty box right before that happened. So they had a chance to win the game on the power play going into that second overtime, and all I could do was just, you know, hold my breath the whole time and hope the guys pulled one out for me to kill that off. And, you know, ultimately in my mind, I said, you know, I wanted to, you know, go out and score the goal because I almost caused the game for us. So, you know, I never thought it would happen, but I just went out there and I still remember the puck coming around and Scotty keeping it in and just keeping it in on the far corner and Patrick going in to get it. And just as he went to go in and get to the corner, he just turned his head a little bit to see where I was at. And I kind of snuck in the back door away from everyone, hoping that he would find me. And, you know, he made one of those unbelievable passes that he had done the whole time I played with him, and put it right on my tape. And we beat Eddie. I think we shocked Eddie that there was nobody with me. And, you know, that was the only way we were going to beat him. He was unbelievable that whole series. And it was the only way we were going to put the puck past him, was go from one side to the other and get him caught looking. So, and then it just went in. I just heard the thump in the back of the net, and then it was just mayhem after that.
Now you mentioned, Jason, you mentioned Scotty. I remember Elias made the pass, but I'm not sure if it was
Scott Stevens.
Oh,
yeah.
Stevens. Okay.
Yeah.
We want to ask you, but
yeah, Scotty Stevens kept it in on the blue line and dumped it to the far corner, and just to keep the play going alive because he didn't have a shot on net. And we, all three of us, were at the top kind of on supporting him to try and keep it in. So he just dumped it in, and Patrick beat, I think it was Hatch on the ice, and beat him to the corner and just threw a backhand back door to me.
The other Scott we want to ask you about too, Jason. Scott Niedermayer going into the Hall of Fame. What was the best attribute of his game?
He just, the way he could skate and control the play and see the ice was incredible. He'd be the first one on the forecheck, and then he'd be the first one back in his own zone. He had that ability to skate without any effort, and he could just read the plays and see the plays, and he wouldn't make the big hit, but you could never get around him because he was always in the right position. And he knew how to play well, really well defensively without, you know, getting into the rough stuff in the mix. He just had that knack that you just couldn't beat him, and he was always the way he could skate and play defensively. And then on the offense, he just, you know, he roamed a lot and could use that skating ability to get back. And just one of those guys that every team wants on their team, and fortunately, I had the opportunity to play with him for many years, and a great person as well.
Jason, after your time in New Jersey, you obviously went to Dallas in the trade that saw Joe Nieuwendyk and Jamie Langenbrenner go to New Jersey. What was the highlight for you, and what was maybe some of the most memorable moments in Dallas? And were you surprised maybe that those teams in Dallas didn't accomplish more?
Yeah, that's, I get that asked a lot. Was there any other years that you thought you could have won? And those years I was here, it was, we had some fantastic teams, and I got to play with a lot of great players. And I think that's one thing that I really enjoyed was the teams I was on. I played with such great players. To take it all in and to look back now with the Mike Bonanno and the Sergei Zubov and guys like that, and Brendan Morrill, and, different guys that I got to play with. Billy Guerin, I got to end up playing with here in Dallas as well. So it was, the teams, we just didn't do as well as we should have. We had a lot of expectations and didn't fulfill them. And, that would probably be one regret is that we didn't win here again with that team, those teams that we had.
And Jason, you went after Dallas, you went to Nashville, and maybe that not a non-traditional hockey market, as people call it. Nashville was in Winnipeg last night playing against the Jets. What was playing in Nashville like, and are the fans maybe underappreciated there for how much passion they have for the game?
They are very underappreciated. It was, we wouldn't sell out every night, and we'd average, 14,000 fans, but it felt like it was sold out every night, just in the fact that they came to the rink and they didn't understand the game fully, but they cheered us on and were behind us 100%, win or lose. The building was loud. The city was so supportive, and it was such a cool music city that for them to embrace hockey was unbelievable. And I had a ton of fun playing there. I thought it was a really cool and fun city to play in, very energetic. And then when we made the playoffs, that the whole place just erupted. It was like we were going to the Stanley Cup Finals the first game of the playoffs. So it was very underrated city for fans and for a hockey city, but a fantastic place to play.
Jason, now that you've announced your retirement and you can look back on your career with Edmonton and New Jersey and Dallas and Nashville and a little bit in St. Louis, now that you can look back on your career and look at how the game has evolved and changed, for you, what's the biggest change in the game over the course of your career? And do you feel that there's anything really, aside from, maybe like headshots and things like that, what's the one thing maybe that you want to see change in the game?
Well, I think the speed of the game has changed. I don't mean the fact that what I'm saying there is I think the speed towards the whole lineup has changed compared to when I first started. You had your first two lines that could really skate and move the puck, and then you had your grinding lines, and then you had really a tough guy line. So now it's all four lines can play against anybody. They can skate against anybody. I think all 7D, 6-7D can skate, move the puck, and play the game to a high, high level against anybody. So I think that's the biggest change that I found was on any given night, didn't matter who you played against, it was tough to play against everybody because everyone could play the game at a high level. And I think what I'd like to see change is the respect factor towards each other on the ice. I think it's kind of gone downhill a little bit. I think guys know they can get away with certain things because they're not going to be, they don't have to answer the bell. Like when I first started, if you went out and did something or disrespected another player, you'd have to answer that to that three or four times of guys who wanted to fight or they were on you for the rest of the game. And it's just not that way anymore. And that just comes from the players, lack of respect towards other players. I love hard hitting and fighting, and that's part of our game. But the cheap shots and the elbows and when the guys aren't looking and hitting from behind, I mean, you didn't get a whole lot of that before because of that. You had to answer the bell for that. So I think if there's one thing that needed to be changed, I think it's that.
Jason, we'll let you go on this last question. Now that you've retired 20 years as an NHL player, what's next for you? Are you going to stick around the game? Or are you going to maybe take a step back? How do you see the next 20 years unfolding?
Well, I'm going to relax for a little bit now and kind of spend time with my family, things I never got to do before, just because the game took up so much of our time. And I'd love to stay in the game. I enjoy it. It's my passion. It's something that I know. And so I'd like to get on with an organization probably, if not this year, next year for sure. And just do something, in the office, front office, or helping out some of the young guys in the minors, or just doing little things like that and see where it goes.
Well, you've done everything and you've seen everything, so I'm sure you'd be an asset to an NHL's organization. Jason Arnott, thanks very much for joining us this afternoon on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, and once again, congratulations on a tremendous career.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Take care, Jason. Thanks very much. Let's go to break. You're listening to TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on tsn1290.ca.
Big thank you to Jason Arnott for having just joined us to talk about his career. In case you missed any of that interview, it will be available for download both on iTunes and on the tsn1290.ca website. Easiest way, just subscribe to the show via podcast on iTunes and get it sent to you each and every week. As well, you get Wednesday show, NHL Midweek, sent to you each and every week. Still to come on today's program from the San Jose Mercury News, David Pollock is going to join us in about 10 minutes' time, give or take.
It's Richard's uncle.
Yeah, Richard's uncle. Spelled differently, but yeah, Richard's uncle. This segment of the program is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. For over 25 years, Rumors has been Winnipeg's home for the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight at Rumors, it's Ron Jasol. Unfortunately, or fortunately, as the case may be for Rumors, is that the show is sold out for that, so there are no tickets available for that, but there is a great roster of comedians upcoming next week and for the next few months and every night at Rumors. So check him out online, rumorscomedyclub.com, or you can give him a call, 204-488-4520. And time is running out, but if you're looking for a place to host your company Christmas party, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club is your destination.
Yeah, I got something cooking up here. 2014, I got to talk to my boy Sheldon Mandel, but I'm planning on doing a Drew Mandel roast.
You were supposed to do that for my bachelor party before I got married, and you guys never came ahead of
that. Well, we proposed it, then you just ate the roast.
That's true. It was a legitimate roast, and I just ate it and said, thank you very much. Yeah.
Yeah. You know. And Remus is going to be the Roastmaster General instead of Jeffrey Ross. And
how funny would that be?
Yeah.
Drew impression. How would that sound, Des?
The Drew impression?
Like Remus hosting the roast.
Well, I, you know, honestly, what we should
come
do.
Come on, baby, come on. I'm waiting for that.
You do a better Remus impression.
Well,
we should just get Remus in here, to be honest with you.
You can't do a Remus impression with Remus. Can't do a Remus impression.
Well, guys. Drew.
Not sure how happy
Remus is going to get in here, and I guarantee he's coming through the door.
He punched you last segment, Ezzy, so
I didn't even feel it. It felt like a scratch more so than a punch.
According to Remus, he says that Leibel, Matty Leibel of The Big Show, actually does a really good Remus impression.
I think I've heard it before.
Really? Leibel kind of sounds regularly like Remus.
Yeah,
though.
That's true. Is that really impressive? Yeah. He's doing himself.
Yeah, he's... Yeah, anyways.
I don't know. You think that Leibel is Remus's mentor?
It's interesting.
Or maybe Remus is Leibel's mentor.
No, Leibel's older than Remus.
You don't have to be older to be a mentor.
You don't
there's
have
like,
to be.
There's only like
1 year
difference.
You're like double our age, Drew. You know?
Double your age. You're 30 now, my old man over there. Yep. You know, you can't handle these late nights out like you had last night. You're struggling today.
Okay. Richie's fine.
Yeah, he's
a professional.
Talking Hall of Fame, Drew, or Hall of Shame here?
Hall of Shame. Hall of Shame. Everybody enjoys the Hall of Shame. Anyways, the Hockey Hall of Fame induction, the four players and Fred Shiro.
What a class.
Yeah, that were inducted in the 2013 Hockey Hall of Fame, got the salute last night at Air Canada Centre in Toronto. And the 2014 candidates are a truly interesting group of characters. We're going to talk about it over the next couple segments, David Pollock in between. But you go through the list, and there are some guys that, you know, there's a lot of guys you can make an argument for that should be in the Hall of Fame.
Yep.
And then it's just a matter of, you know, it's very much beauty is in the eye of the beholder. But unfortunately, when it comes to the Hockey Hall of Fame, you never know who the beholder is because they don't actually publish who the voters are. So that's something that I think should change, but that's for another day and time.
I think we know a couple of Michael Farber's on there.
Yeah, well, you don't know who all of them are, and they never have to defend their votes. So that is, I think, a problem with the situation.
Oh, whatever. Just talk about it.
Okay. We'll talk about it. Yeah,
enough with
defend
the
defend their votes, Drew. Like, this isn't, it's not like Harper and the rest of the crew. They're just voting on the Hall of Fame. I mean,
yeah, like, where's Nancy Pelosi right now?
Start with Dave Andrechuk. 23 years in the NHL. He won one Stanley Cup. He's been eligible since 2009. 1,639 games played, 1,338 points.
No.
You don't think he should be this time or at all?
At all. I mean, again, Dave Andrechuk, a lot of respect for him. He has 640 goals. But, I mean, do I think of Dave Andrechuk as a guy who was a Hall of Famer? I mean, this is the thing about the Hall of Fame. Like, otherworldly talent, some of the best ever. I mean, he played 23 seasons. He's a respected guy. I mean, he won that Cup with Tampa. I have a ton of respect for Dave Andrechuk. I just don't – to me, he's not a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, he was a great player, and he finally won the Stanley Cup with the Lightning there. We all remember that, and he was the captain. And as Richie said, year after year, he was a 30-goal scorer, and I think he had one 50-goal year. And to me, when you're – Richie's right. I agree with Richie. Hockey Hall of Fame is the elite of the elite, but this is the thing.
So you want to keep it at the Hockey Hall of Fame, not the Hockey Hall of Very Good.
Yes.
Well, and this – but this is the point here. And, you know, we're not – Dave Andrechuk, for year after year with the Leafs, we remember how good he was, the Sabres. But you look at the list, and we're going to go through it, as you mentioned, over the next couple segments here. It's a question of some of the guys that were eligible that were really good hockey players, but then you have – you compare that to some of the younger players, whether you want to say an Eric Lindros or a Peter Forsberg, and then you start comparing how dominant they were. I mean, those guys, to me, are Hall of Famers.
Rob Blake, 20 years in the NHL, one Stanley Cup. He's won the Norris Trophy.
Easily
Hall
of Famer.
Four All-Star selections.
But the All-Star selections, I think, is first-team All-Star. It's not actually NHL All-Star game.
All-Star game. First-team All-Star.
I've always been a Rob Blake fan. I think Rob Blake could do it all. He could skate. He could shoot. He could play a physical game if he needed to. He won the Stanley Cup with the Avs in 2001. To me, he was dominant at times. He went to the finals with L.A. Best defenseman in 1998 in Nagano. To me, he was one of the top five defensemen in the NHL for probably close to 10-year period. And it might not have been the flashiest guy in the world. He played and he got 240 goals over a 10-year that not a ton of guys were scoring, especially from the back end. To me, Rob Blake is a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, I don't know if he'll get in this year because it's a tough year. But I think I'm looking at it like, you know, I think, yes, he should be a Hall of Famer. I don't know about this year because I have some other guys I'd like in the Hall of Fame, and I know we're going to give those at the end of the two segments, but he's an absolute Hall of Famer. Richie mentioned he was mainly a Los Angeles King and then went to the Colorado Avalanche. That's where he won the Cup. But you're talking the late 90s, early 2000s when he won the Norris. He was on some bad L.A. teams. I remember, you know, Matthias Nordstrom those days. He was so dominant, and you know he always had the patented Rob Blake hip check, but he had a big point. And Richie mentioned the Olympics. He accomplished everything, and he was a perennial All-Star. You know, four All-Star selections, but if you throw in the second team All-Stars, he was probably more like 10. That's what Richie was getting at there. You know, he was dominant, excellent defenseman. And he absolutely deserves to be in the Hall of Fame.
You could trust him in all situations. Not a lot of guys were able to play that role. I mean, to me, he's a Hall of Famer.
Hey, you're talking about like Rob Blake, a Chris Pronger, a Shea Weber. Yeah. Like that. These guys are one in a million.
We'll come back to this after the interview with David Pollack. So let's go to break. When we come back, San Jose Mercury News, David Pollack is going to join us.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
One hour to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. That's Richard Pollack. That's Ezra Ginsberg. Producer Remus is over there, and producer Tim is over there. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is www.illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show from the San Jose Mercury News, where he covers the San Jose Sharks, David Pollack. David, good afternoon, and thanks very much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks for the invitation.
David, Sharks have lost their last four games, albeit only one of those losses came in regulation. Sort of just a standard slowdown after their tremendous start to the season, or is there anything more concerning with the Sharks?
Well, there is a familiar pattern there that they actually thought they were going to beat the pattern this year. Like you said, they had a strong start to the season. Last year, after they got their first regulation loss, they didn't get another regulation win. They didn't get another win of any kind for seven games. So this year, when they got a loss, they immediately bounced back with wins in Montreal and Ottawa. So everybody said, all right, this is a different team. But like you said, it's been four now. The most recent was a genuine stinker. Even Joe Thornton, who is a genuinely positive guy after a lot of things that go wrong on the ice, couldn't hide this one. He basically said, we stunk out the joint for two periods. And Todd McClellan was questioning their work ethic. So in a sense that maybe this year is different, maybe this year is not so different. And I think the upcoming five-game road trip is going to be a good test to see how that plays out.
That's interesting. That starts tomorrow, David, here in Winnipeg. Brent Burns is a guy, obviously, they make the switch and they move him up to forward last year. I didn't think it was going to work, and it's actually worked quite well, but he's been out of the lineup for a few games after getting hit in the face with a puck. What's his status?
His status is that he will be on the plane with the team, but I would not expect to see him at least in the early part of the trip. He has started practicing, but he's wearing the orange jersey, which in San Jose pretty much is a don't-hit-me jersey during practices. So it's a no-contact status right now. He's getting there. You know, the team's been very vague about the specifics of what the injury is, but he has missed about eight games now.
Are we thinking concussion? Is that likely?
I'm not in the business of speculating on medical matters, but if somebody else wanted to speculate on a concussion, I probably wouldn't try to argue against that too much.
Okay.
David, now that Brent Burns is out, Tommy Wingles has taken his spot there on the top line with Thomas, Teenage Mutant Ninja Hurdle. For you, who has been more surprising this year, Tommy Wingles or Thomas Hurdle?
Well, I think you can say both of them without too much argument. I mean, Hurdle... The team had been very quietly saying, keep an eye on this guy. You know, Doug Wilson likes to say we don't hype our players, but every once in a while there'll be a little bit of a keep an eye on this guy kind of message, and we got that with Hurdle, and he obviously started out huge. Tommy Wingles has been around for a couple years. He's putting up offensive numbers now that he hasn't before, and we talked to him about it the other day, and he said it's pretty much a matter of confidence and the opportunity to play with some of the better players. And McClellan put emphasis on the confidence part. In a sense, maybe Tommy Wingles is the bigger surprise in that, you know, you see a guy for a couple of years, you see what you think, you know him as a player, and then, bingo, he's starting to put up points that weren't there before.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, online at tsn1290.ca. We're joined by David Pollock of the San Jose Mercury News. He covers the San Jose Sharks. David, Marty Havlat has returned to the Sharks lineup after being out to start the season. He was injured, as you know, you can say often about Marty Havlat. He's played four games so far this year. How has he looked, and what are the Sharks expecting out of him for the season?
It's been kind of mixed. I mean, the team has not been clicking with Marty back in the lineup, and you don't want to hang that on one guy because it was pretty much a team-wide failure, that the Vancouver game. But Marlowe and Couture had him on the line. Didn't quite seem to be working as well as maybe they would like, but it's early, and the Sharks are going to tell you that it takes a while for a guy to get back, that this is essentially Marty's preseason right now. The expectations, they would like to see Marty, of course, be the player he was before, but Todd McClellan has mentioned a few times he needs to be able to adapt to the style of play the Sharks are going for now, which is an up-tempo north-south game, and there's still a question of whether Marty can do that or not.
I was just going to ask you that. Sorry, go ahead, David.
I'm sorry, let me go ahead.
Well, I was just going to ask you, sorry to interrupt, I was going to ask you in terms of, like, Marty Havel likes to play kind of that east-west game, stick handling, making moves, which seems completely opposite to how the Sharks have kind of varied their style, and maybe you can just expand on what you were saying there.
Yeah, it is. You're right. Marty is more of a zigzag down the ice, wait for the trailer, playmaking kind of guy, and that is not what the Sharks are looking for these days. But last year, back in March, when the Sharks went on their little stretch run when they played very well and made the playoffs and were playing very good hockey, Marty was part of that then because he and Couture and Marlowe were the line, and they held their own for it pretty well. So there's evidence that he can do it. It just hasn't shown up yet this year.
Yeah, David, do you know why? I mean, we've heard a lot, and you've written about it a lot in terms of the change in style of play by the Sharks. Do you know what precipitated that change?
I think it was just sort of a realization, you know, hockey is a copycat game, and even the coaches and GMs will tell you that. And the Sharks looked what was really working around, and it wasn't the slow things down, wait for the trailer kind of offense. It was more the let's throw the puck. Todd McClellan's always preached throw the puck at the net, but it's more of the north-south, crash the net, get there before the next guy. We talked a little bit yesterday. He likes to call it a numbers game, that if they've got three, the other team's got three guys in one spot, you better have four, and that's how you're going to control the play. So it takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of energy to be that fourth guy to get there. I think it was just sort of a realization the way the league was going and the feeling the Sharks had to evolve with that.
You know, in the offseason, the Sharks aren't a team that goes out generally, David, and makes a big splash free agent-wise, and I think this year is probably no exception. But the team did bring in Tyler Kennedy. What's been your impression of his game so far, and how has he fit in?
I think the Sharks probably haven't seen the best of Tyler Kennedy yet. He's fit in pretty well. They like the fact that they can use him pretty much on any line that they need him, and he's pretty much played on the top three at different times. He brings the energy. He does play that kind of up and down the ice game. He's definitely not afraid to shoot the puck. He's made some nice offensive contributions, but I think they think there's still a little more. Todd McClellan's been very charitable, though. He hasn't been critical of Tyler at all.
Sorry, David. You're tuned to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. We're joined by David Pollock of the San Jose Mercury News discussing the San Jose Sharks.
Yeah, David, we're just so excited to get these questions in for you. We just have so many questions about the Sharks. We haven't had you on in a while. That's why we're a little overzealous here.
I'll make the answer shorter. I'm sorry.
Longer is better. Don't worry.
We have to talk to you about Mark Edward Vlasic because you're hearing his name more and more often as far as being a guy that's going to make Team Canada. And I guess a few months ago, you'd ask people who they had on Team Canada and Vlasic wasn't on there. And you know this better than anybody, that Vlasic has been an excellent defenseman for the Sharks for many years now. What do you think about that? Are you starting to hear that buzz like we are here in Winnipeg?
Yeah, well, I mean, we hear it a lot, especially when the Sharks are playing one of the Canadian teams, because obviously the Team Canada roster is a big issue up there, and I totally understandable. I'll confess, when I saw that he was initially on the list of players invited to the orientation camp this summer, I was a little surprised, only because he's always been solid defensively. He's a solid positional defenseman. He's great with his stick at breaking up passes and scoring chances. He does all those things really well. But he's never really gotten the attention or the offensive numbers to kind of warrant an Olympic tryout, is sort of it was my thinking. This year, though, he's put up the offensive numbers, and when you add that to everything else he brings, I don't think it's unrealistic to say he's got a decent chance at playing in Russia in February. I don't think that would be out of the question at all. I asked him directly, are the offensive numbers, is that you trying to get the attention of the Olympic folks? Do you feel you need that in your game? And he said, I hope not, that if he's going to make the Olympic team, it's going to be because of his defensive skills, and the offensive stuff has been a plus. But he wasn't trying to become that guy who gets the attention for the offensive numbers.
You know, David, when you're looking at this team, that game on October 30th against the Kings, a team that obviously knocked out the Sharks last year in the second round, are the Sharks still susceptible to playing against bigger teams with their defense as it's currently constructed?
That's a fair question, because I was watching that game, and the Kings, their down-low offensive game, they were pretty much controlling that part of the rink, and you don't see that against the Sharks very much. They really were able to sustain the kind of pressure that the Sharks are usually able to break up with their own outlet passes and speed. It's a tough matchup for them. I don't know if it's an impossible matchup by any means. That was a 7-game series last year. This game went beyond 60 minutes on October 30th. But it's a tough matchup for the Sharks.
David, we'll let you go on this last question. Obviously, when you're 10-2-4 to start the season, things are going pretty well. But if you had to point to an area that you think the Sharks would be looking to upgrade throughout the course of the season and before the trade deadline, what do you think that area of concern would be for the Sharks? And where do you think that they'd be focusing their energies?
I would almost have to say, their top four defensemen are doing pretty well. I think that they've shown a little bit of vulnerability in that third defensive pair right now. Mm-hmm. Jason Demers did not have a good game against Vancouver. Some would argue he's had a few not good games lately. Matt Irwin has somehow earned his spot in the press box the last three games. He's one of the Sharks I know still have a lot of high hopes for, and he's been a very good defenseman at times. But I think right now, if you look at their defense, that would be a little bit of a vulnerable place if they could bring in one more veteran like they did last year when they brought in Scott Hannon. Hannon, frankly, she had a really strong showing in the playoffs last year and earned another spot on the roster this year. I still thought he might be the seventh D-man, but he's seen a lot of action, and he's earned it. I mean, it's not like they're sitting somebody who's shown better in playing Scott Hannon. He's earned his spot right now.
David, are you aware of any lineup changes for tomorrow's game against the last Sharks game?
I tried to get a commitment out of Todd McClellan this morning before they got on the plane on who he's going to put on defense, because a lot of us are speculating that Matt Irwin will be in and Jason Demers will be out, but Todd wasn't ready to disclose that yet. Okay. He basically said, I'm not sharing that information.
Okay. Thank you for that.
Sure.
We will find out tomorrow when the San Jose Sharks visit the Winnipeg Jets here at MTS Center. David Pollock covers the Sharks for the San Jose Mercury News. David, thanks very much for doing this afternoon.
You're welcome, guys.
Take care, David. Thanks very much. Let's go to break. You're listening to TSN 1290. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290.
See what Remus is doing? I know Remus doesn't like this music. He's just doing it to bug us now.
Your mic's not on, Remus, so we don't know what you just said.
What'd you say, Remus?
This is Foster the People. Great CD. Some Lollapalooza 2 years ago.
Anybody else not care about that piece of information?
Yeah, Remus.
I'll tell you what this band is not good.
Let's get back to our conversation about the potential Hockey Hall of Fame inductees for 2014. We left off, Dave Andrzejczyk got two no's from Richard and Ezra. Rob Blake got two yeses from Richard and Ezra. We go to one of the more controversial ones. He's been eligible since 2007, Pat Burns.
I say yes, and I think this year he should go in. A lot of people thought he should go in previous years. Pat Burns was an excellent coach. Coached the Devils, talking about Jason Arnott. He wasn't on that team, but in 2003, Pat Burns was the coach. He was a great coach and obviously passed away in recent years. I think when you look at his coaching record, three Jack Adams trophies, just the one Stanley Cup, but he had a great, great record. He was really a well-liked guy, former cop in Quebec. So I say yes for Pat Burns.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Coaching hotbeds in Toronto, Boston, Montreal, then wins it with the Devils. Did a really good job, 501 wins and first team All-Star. But he coached 14 seasons, won a cup, three Jack Adams. I think that's hall worthy.
Rod Brind'Amour, one Stanley Cup, two Selke Awards, 1,484 games played, 1,184 points. Yes or no on Rod Brind'Amour?
Why is he listed as center on this list? Left wing, excuse me.
Yeah, he was a center.
You know, he's not, Drew, for me. Rod Brind'Amour can play on my team any day of the week, but when I think of Hall of Famers, Rod Brind'Amour is not a Hall of Famer for me.
It's a tough one. Rod Brind'Amour, they used to call him Rod the Bod because of his conditioning. I was a huge Rod Brind'Amour fan member on the Philadelphia Flyers.
Like are you looking at his abs or
is he getting in because he's in good shape?
I'm just saying. I mean, he was really known for his fitness, and then he won the cup there as the captain of the Hurricanes. For me, that's a tough one. I want to say yes, but he's one where he didn't quite have as much dominance as far as goal scoring. Like, he ended up with almost 500 goals, 480 or whatever, and he's close, but. I'm going to pass on that one. I'm not going to say no.
Passing.
I'll say
Ezzy,
yes.
Let's go here.
I'll say yes.
Ezzy's going to go yes. Okay, fair enough.
Not this year, though.
Well, we're talking about this year.
We are? Okay, no, then.
What, are we talking about next year?
talking about practice?
I honestly thought the rules of this were pretty straightforward.
Yeah, 3 years from now, Rod Brind'Amour gets in.
All right.
Guy Carboneau?
No. Guy Carboneau, great player, really good defensively, great on faceoffs, all that stuff. But he's not a Hall of Famer.
Three Stanley Cups? Three Selkies?
Yeah.
Never? Or just this year?
He's been eligible since 2003.
putting my All-Star team in, I mean, I know Bob Clark picked him on the panel on Wednesday, and I have great respect for him, but no.
I'm going to say yes, but not this year.
I'm marking that down as a no because I don't know what any of that means. Theo Fleury.
Yes.
Over a point a game.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm going to give Fleury a yes, too. I got three right now. Like, only one more left.
Well, you know what we're going to do? We'll go through the entire list, and if you have more...
Fleury might get bumped for me.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
But you know what? You look at Drew. You look
might get bumped. It's yes or no.
Well, because there's two more guys that I have.
You can only max induct four players each year.
And the thing about Fleury that I have to say is, you know, his size, the fact that he really was a number one right winger. I mean, he played on a lot of teams, 455 goals, point a game, dominant player, obviously went through a lot of personal troubles. And if he hadn't, he probably would have been, you know, greater than 1,100 points for sure. So
it's time for Theo to get in.
Yeah.
Adam Foote.
I'll start off. I'm going to say no, but he just had his jersey retired by the Colorado Avalanche. He's working with them as a defense consultant. Huge respect for Adam Foote. I was more of a defensive defenseman back in my day, so I really respect those those stay-at-home defensemen. Not comparing myself to Adam Foote, obviously, but saying that I really respect him for what he did. But you know, he didn't get a lot of points.
Yeah,
a bit successful guy, but I don't think he's a Hall of Famer.
A lot of respect for Adam Foote, but if you look down the list, you see Kevin Lowe, and he's not in similar kind of player.
Yeah,
Peter Forsberg
is a shoo-in, 100%. Best, arguably, and the best centers ever to play the game. If you were picking a team and starting a team from scratch, or, you know, he's right behind, you know, he's behind Gretz and Lemieux and some of those guys, but he's in that conversation after those guys.
Hold on, isn't Forsberg still playing for the Predators?
He got sent down.
Forsberg is a yes. Yes. I don't even need to say anything, add to anything. He was one of the most dynamic offensive players. If it wasn't for injuries, he'd have 300 or 400 more points, maybe 500 more points. One of the most dominant players in his era for the Colorado Avalanche. I remember 2001, the year after the Devils won it. He was just absolutely incredible. And it was a shame that, and again, talk about internationally, he was good for Sweden for many years. So he's a shoo-in.
Bill Guerin?
No, Bill Guerin was a great player, a really good shot, good skate, but he was not a Hall of Famer.
No, I think he's a really good player, but I think when you look at it, you know, and then you think of Pittsburgh when he won the Stanley Cup there in 2009, really good player, but when you look at the other guys that are you know, up for nominations, he's just a step below those, so I'll go no too.
Dominic Hasek.
Shoo-in, top three goalie ever. I don't think there's any question about it. Dominated. Didn't win a cup. Didn't win a cup with Buffalo, and I know that's the factor. Did win with Detroit, but one of the best goalies of all time. Him, Wahlberger, Sochik, that's the conversation. He's a shoo-in.
No.
What?
Not this year. I think in future years, yes, but I think this year I don't have him going in. Because I told you, I mean, I'm not going to give a no or yes. For this year, no, if you're going to make me say no, but I think overall, Richie, yeah, he's going to get in eventually.
He's a shoo-in this year.
He's a top five goalie of all time.
This is his first year of eligibility. As he still say no?
The shoo-in.
No, I'll go no.
Okay. Paul Henderson?
Well, no, Drew. I mean, historically, Canadian Hall of Fame, all that stuff, but not Hockey Hall of Fame, I don't think.
I think it's a nice story. You know, people forget, as a kind of a regular, everyday NHL player, Paul Henderson wasn't a superstar by any means. You know, 200 goals in 700 games. People remember, I don't think you should get into the Hall of Fame for just one goal in 1972. Even though that goal was very significant, I think he's already been immortalized with that goal. So I'm going to say no.
Phil Housley.
Phil Housley, great respect for him. Could power play, could quarterback power play, could move the puck out of his own zone. In this day and age, might have even been a more valuable player based on the way the skating and such. But the game was open then, too. Not a Hall of Famer, though. Just wasn't good enough defensively.
It's a tough one, and what hurts him, Richie, is he has no Stanley Cups, and he played for a lot of teams, and towards the end of his career, he wasn't as dominated, but I think he's still number one or number two in American defenseman scoring, so it's a tough one, but this year I'm going to say no.
Curtis Joseph.
I like Cujo. I really like Cujo. I always loved his game, but it's not a Hall of Famer for me right now. I might reconsider that down the road, but not right now.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with Richie. Cujo, I think, you know, again, he had some dominating performances with the Edmonton Oilers, and if you remember, even further back with the St. Louis Blues, and then he kind of rose to fame with the Oilers, and we didn't mention the Leafs as well, and then he kind of trailed off towards the end of his career. But I think that, you know, he's not quite, when you, especially I didn't have Hasek going in this year, so I can't have Cujo going in. I think it's going to be tough for him to get into the Hall of Fame because I think he's just a step below, you know, the Haseks and the Brodeurs and the Rois. So we'll see.
Paul Kariya, exactly a point a game. 989 games played, 989 points.
You know, you consider Fleury, you consider Kariya. I think you're looking at both those guys in similar ways. But right now, no, not for me. Doesn't have the cup. Courageous effort, certainly, in 2003 against the Devils. But if he had kept his pace from earlier in his career, I think he'd be an absolute shoo-in. But the way he faded with injuries, I think, has cost him a chance at the Hall right now.
Yeah, I'm going to say no this year, too. But I think when you talk about, like, you know, upper echelon players, guys that changed the game and everything like that, Korea was dominant. It's funny, 989 career points in 989 career games. But, you know, earlier on in his career, you look at what he did with the Ducks, 100-point seasons, came close in 2003 to winning a Stanley Cup, was good for Team Canada. I'm going to say no this year, but I think going forward, I'd be happy for him if he got in, you know, down the road.
Steve Larmer.
Steve Larmer's been on here for a long time, Drew, and his numbers are awesome. He was great, won the Cup with the Rangers, was great in the Canada Cup, but... I mean, I'll trust the... I remember a bit of his career, but not the entirety of his career, and it's been since 98 now, so I don't think it's going to end anytime soon, so I'll say no.
I'm going to say no. I remember the most about Steve Larmer's career is that Ironman streak, and when he played 500 or 600 games, whatever it was, in a row. Very, very good player. He was never a 50... consistent 50-goal guy, but kind of like a consistent 20-goal guy, and was captain of the Hawks and all that. So, you know, good career, point-a-game guy, over 1,000 points, but... He hasn't got in, I guess, 15 years now. So,
John LeClair?
No. John LeClair is a really good goal scorer, Drew, but he didn't do enough for me. I know that's obviously great quality, but play with Eric Lindros, which is a nice perk. But he wasn't a Hall of Famer. He was a great goal scorer, but he wasn't a Hall of Famer.
That's a no for me, too. I don't think he accomplished enough. He got a Stanley Cup, and he deserves credit for that. But I don't think he's done enough maybe to be in that upper echelon. It's tough again. I mean, we're talking about the Hockey Hall of Fame, the creme de la creme, right? Yeah. So I think that it's a no for me. But, you know, back in the day, Legion of Doom, power forward, he was a great player for many years.
Eric Lindros.
I think he's a Hall of Famer, but I don't think he's a Hall of Famer this year.
I agree with that. Cam Neely, I remember I wrote that article a couple years back. I've always said Lindros should get in. Yeah. So I don't think it's this year either, but... A couple years from now, 3 years down the road, I wouldn't be surprised if they... It's tough. It's a tough call, though, with Lindros.
Kevin Lowe.
As a general manager? No, I don't think so, but great career.
Ooh, I don't know, 6 Stanley Cups, but yeah, again, Kevin Lowe was kind of part of those teams with, you know, Paul Coffey, Curry, Gretzky, Messier, and he was kind of more of a defensive defenseman who could contribute offensively, but I don't think he was... An excellent player. He was a very good player.
Sergei Makarov.
I know Makarov going this year, he needs to be considered, but you look at some of that international competition, he was incredible, but also some of that stuff wasn't against the pros, right? It wasn't against the best of the best.
Right.
So that I think, it downgrades him a little bit this year. But by everybody, you know, that KLM line was one of the best ever, apparently.
Yeah. Other guys, Larionov and Krutov.
Right.
He didn't do enough in the NHL for me, and this is the Hockey Hall of Fame is an NHL...
It's not, though. It's hockey.
It's in hockey. But it's, I know it's the focus tends to be.
Are we going to be talking about Alexei Morozov a couple years from now? Like, okay, no for me.
Mike Modano.
See, yeah, I think Modano is a Hall of Famer. I think, you know, he's not a point of game. I think at the end of his career, he tailed off a bit. 500 goals, number one center on a cup-winning team, number one center for many years, could play both ends of the ice, could score and pass, could do everything. Yeah, he's a Hall of Famer for me.
Yeah, not this year, but in future years, absolutely, he's a Hall of Famer. He was the face of the North Stars and the Dallas Stars. Excellent goal scorer, as Richie mentioned. Got the Stanley Cup finally in 99. You know, one of the best American players. Paved the way for so many American-born players. So I think he'll get in, but I don't think this year.
Alex McGillney.
You look at his stats and you're thinking, okay, maybe, but McGillney's not a Hall of Famer for me. Maybe in a weak year, but not this year. Not this year. I mean, he's got some stats, but I mean, there were years that he wasn't that effective, and if I'm putting it, that Hall of Fame perception to me, he doesn't fit that role.
Yeah, excellent player. He was part of that 2000 team with Jason Arnott. But yeah, he was an amazing dynamic player, 76 year goals the year that Solani got 76 goals. But I think he's, you know, probably not a Hall of Famer for me either.
Marcus Naslund?
No, Drew, I mean, he had those years as a great goal scorer, but Marcus Naslund's not a Hall of Famer.
For the same kind of reasons as McGillney. An excellent player, but, you know, McGillney had the cup. Marcus Naslund didn't have the cup. Yeah. But, you know, Hall of Fame, you're talking again about the greatest players, and he was a very good player, one of the greatest Vancouver Canucks, but I don't think a Hall of Famer.
Mark Recchi.
Mark Recchi was had a great career, 1,500 points. He played 1,600 games. That's great, to his credit, three cups, all that stuff. But Mark Recchi wasn't your go-to big-time guy. You know, when he was on those Habs teams as that go-to guy or Philly, you know, he wasn't. Those teams weren't dominant. To me, he's not a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, I'm going to say no as well for probably the same reasons. He wasn't ever a top scorer or top point producer, a consistent guy, and deserves a lot of respect for getting the cup with the Boston Bruins, and then he got the cup with the Hurricanes earlier on in his career with the Penguins. Great career, but I don't think a Hall of Famer.
Gary Roberts?
Gary Roberts was a really good pro, respectable pro, scored over 400 goals, Drew, but Gary Roberts was not a Hall of Fame hockey player.
I know. Jeremy Roenick.
Not even Ezzy there?
Well, I mean, Ezzy, do you have anything different to say about Gary Roberts?
Well, again, Gary Roberts was a power forward. Again, I'll say no, but I think one of the things I respect the most is when he had those neck injuries, mm-hmm. and then he came back to be a very effective NHLer with the Leafs, and then he played for three other teams after that, the Lightning he finished his career with, but not a Hall of Famer.
Jeremy Roenick.
Jeremy Roenick, if he was voting himself, man, no, Jeremy Roenick was a really good player, but Jeremy Roenick was not a Hall of Famer. I mean, he had years where he tore it up there with the Blackhawks. But the LA Kings and Sharks years were whatever. I mean, the Flyers, he had chances to beat Tampa Bay in that series and go to the final, and they were more talented, I think, than Tampa. They didn't do it. His Phoenix teams never did anything. Blackhawks teams made the final the one year, got demolished by a better team. But Jeremy Roenick was not a Hall of Famer for me. Look at his never on first team NHL. Yeah, he played as a good player, really good player, but not a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, I'll agree with Rich. No, for me.
Keith Tkachuk.
I mean, did his team ever get out of the first round?
No.
Maybe even with St. Louis. I mean, Keith Tkachuk was a goal scorer, and a respected goal scorer. And he paid the price. He did a lot of things, but Keith Tkachuk was not a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, I'm going to say no for Tkachuk as well. For many years, he was a top goal scorer. I think he had, I want to say, 5 or 6 40-plus goal seasons. 50 with the Jets, for sure. But no playoff success hurts him.
Doug Waite, last guy.
Dougie Waite was one of my favorites to watch. Great passer, could do a lot of things. But Dougie Waite, not a good enough goal scorer, didn't add enough in other areas of the game, was a solid, really good NHL player, but was not a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, he's eligible for the first time this year. That hurts him. So I'm going to say no for the same reasons. I think this list, you have 25 guys on this list, and a lot of these guys are amazing players. But again, you're competing. Put it this way, a Doug Waite, is against a Hasek or a Rob Blake this year, and you know he's unfortunately not quite at that level, but a great player though.
Richie, you're 6 Hall of Famers. You're gonna have to narrow these down. You're gonna have to drop 2 of these guys off the list. Your 6 are Rob Blake, Pat Burns, Theo Fleury, Peter Forsberg, Dominic Hasek, and Mike Modano.
I'm probably leaning towards taking off Burns, but I think Burns does deserve to go. I'm going to say Burns is in, Hasek's in, Forsberg's in, and Rob Blake's in. Modano and Fleury can wait till next year.
Modano and Fleury. Ezzy, you're 4, so you don't have to drop anybody.
Yep.
Are Rob Blake, Pat Burns, Theron Fleury, and Peter Forsberg.
Yep.
So the only one you guys disagree on is Dominic Hasek. And Ezzy, you have Theo Fleury in there.
Yeah. Good Manitoba, Saskatchewan boy. I hope Theo gets in there.
I think Fleury deserves to get in, but just not this year. Too tough.
We'll see when the voting is unveiled later on this season. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Like a cat is being run over by a car. What is this?
This is Soundgarden.
Yeah, come on, man.
It's awful.
Drew.
Outshined. Right. No, Jesus Christ Post.
This is a Rusty Cage.
Cage. You know what, Reem?
This is a Johnny Cash cover.
Johnny Cash did a great version of this. This was off of Bad Motorfinger.
I don't know anything you guys just
Soundgarden.
Said.
You know,
they played this at the, not Audioslave concert, the Velvet Revolver concert?
No, Audioslave.
Audioslave concert.
Audioslave.
I always mix those two super bands up.
Did they?
Yeah, they did. Rusty Cage.
I was at that concert. Good show.
You don't remember?
Chris Cornell was in Winnipeg recently, wasn't he?
I hear he's good. Really good concert. He's at the, Burton like a couple years ago. I hear that show was amazing.
Oh, yeah. Plays acoustic.
Yep.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the Linden Market Dental Center. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior wearing a proper fitting custom-made mouth guard designed for you by Dr. Les Rikus and the Linden Market Dental Center is an essential part of your protective equipment. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center at 204-487-2226 or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. Gentlemen, the Philadelphia Flyers, despite the fact that they're now beating the Edmonton Oilers by a 4-2 score, pretend that that game's not going on. On Thursday night, they lost to New Jersey 3-0, and Claude Giroux refuses to face the media after he did that on Thursday night. Didn't come out to talk about the team's performance, didn't come out to talk about his own performance. I should point out now that he has scored a goal today against Edmonton.
Yeah, so he scored a goal, and our good friend Anthony Sanfilippo just tweeted out about 10 minutes ago, Giroux scores, and then in parenthesis, this tweet has been scheduled since April 15th. It's funny.
It is funny. I mean, do you think, you know, what do you make of Claude Giroux not facing the media after that Thursday night loss? Is that a sign that he's not suited to be captain of that team?
Well, not suited. I think feeling the pressure, Drew. I think they've put a lot of pressure on his shoulders, and he's not handling it that well. I don't think that you can make a determination, boom, he shouldn't be the captain. But it's a sinking ship right now, and luckily he's in the Eastern Conference as opposed to Edmonton and Winnipeg. But it's a sinking ship right now, and I think he's just really feeling the pressure. I mean, if he does that more than once or twice a year, then you have a lot of concern. But you can give him a free pass. And I've been hard on Giroux, but I think you can give him one free pass for this.
So he gets one free pass for bailing out on...
He can't do it again, though.
Has he?
Period.
About on Claude Giroux, as far as the season has gone so far for him?
No. Obviously, you weren't listening.
As you can't be on Twitter while you're on the show, because you are clearly you were reading your Twitter, and then you looked at Drew. Your face was like, "What are we talking about here?"
There was a lot of good Claude Giroux tweets.
Remus, can you get in on how deer in headlights as he looked?
Yeah, you had no idea what was going on.
Well, I knew we were talking about Claude Giroux.
Well, that's great of you because we're on the radio.
Well, I mean, as far as Claude Giroux goes, and you know his decision not to talk to the media, it's troubling.
Hold on, in honor of Ezzy, not paying attention, there, got to play this.
Oh boy, Ezzy!
I thought it was going to be the bus sound.
Yeah.
Well, no. That was well timed. Well done, there, Remus. Yeah. So, what do you think? Does he get a pass for bailing out on facing the media on Thursday night, or is that a sign that he's not suited to be the captain of that team?
I don't think he gets a pass. Because it's as Andrew Ladd has to do in Winnipeg, he has to talk to the media, and he does talk to the media after every game. But, you know, you're hearing reports that there's trouble in that dressing room, and Claude Giroux has become you're hearing that he's pouting, and he's been a negative influence on the team, and he's not doing a very good job. I mean, I've said this for the last couple of weeks, even 3 weeks, because the Flyers started off 0-3 and fired Laviolette. I, under no circumstances, guys, thought it would be this bad in Philly. Yeah. I mean, if you would have told me, again, I've said this before, Claude Giroux would get his first goal in his 17th game, I mean, I would have said, you're ridiculous. This is a guy who was invited, didn't go, but was invited to Canada's orientation camp. He was on their radar. A lot of people picked him. I believe I picked him. And I think he's played his way off of the team. But the way he has played, the way Jakub Voracek has played, their defense right now is so slow and so bad. And Mark Streit has not really improved that team. They're not a good transition team. They're failing to generate offense. Right now, they're one of the worst offensive teams in the NHL. And, you know,
when you score four goals against the Oilers, as they've done this afternoon, it should really only count for like half goals because the Oilers are that bad defensively.
Right. But, you know, back to Claude Giroux not going to talk to the media. I mean, again, I think there's a problem in that dressing room. There's a problem with his leadership. I don't think he's doing a good job as captain right now.
His 8-year contract extension hasn't even kicked in yet. It kicks in next year. 8 years, $66.2 million.
Well, Drew, they'll just use a buyout on him. Oh, wait. No, they can't.
His cap hit is $8.275 million.
That's not a good contract.
Would you trade for Claude Giroux right now?
there are teams I would definitely trade for Claude Giroux right now, Drew. I just think, you know, he has the talent. I don't know what's going on there. Why he's not going to Team Canada orientation? Is he getting bad advice? Is this just the way he is? But I don't think you can write off the whole 8 years right now. Let's take a little bit.
Well, but I mean, you're taking a risk.
It's been 15 games here.
I know, but would you?
And last year, I mean, you know, he
point a game last year.
Yeah, I know, but the team was a joke. Yeah. In terms of their performance, so I mean, that's something that has to fall on your shoulders too. But a little bit more patience is in order.
If things go bad in Philly, as they are right now,
yeah.
And you look at that roster, and there's a lot of guys that people would like on that roster.
Oh, for sure.
Who are you asking for? Who are you calling about the most on that team?
Depends on what your needs
regardless of your compensation and how it fits into your roster.
Well, it depends on what your needs are. Do you need a big banger ghost to the net like Hartnell or Simmons? Or do you want more of a skill guy who plays center like a Shen or a Voracek like a passer? Depends on the team need. But I think all those guys are probably available in terms of anybody's available depending on the package. But they have a ton of talent.
Well, let's take Evander Kane. Because we heard that the Philadelphia Flyers called the Jets when they first moved back here and said, we'll give you Mike Richards if you give us Evander Kane.
No, it was Kane, Burmistrov, and the Scheifele pick was what the rumor was.
Okay, so that's just obviously, well, they can have Burmistrov now for Mike Richards.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you're Evander Kane, or you're the Jets, you're Kevin Cheveldayoff, and you have Evander Kane, and you're calling Paul Holmgren.
You're probably asking for, like, Voracek and a defenseman.
Voracek and Braden Chen?
He's a forward.
Braden
Coburn?
I meant Braden Coburn.
I mean, I think the Jets would seriously consider that offer if that was actually made.
And if you look at the Jets' weakness, Richie, it's up the middle. And Braden Shen, is he a first-line center?
Certainly hasn't proven that.
I think
you don't sign Vinny LeCavalier if you think he's a second-line center this year.
Right.
And or maybe you do because you're Philly.
It's probably Voracek, or if you're talking about a guy like Simmons who is not as prolific a goal scorer as Kane or Voracek, but he's a guy at 20 goal scorer.
Well, Voracek would be a passer because Voracek we're speculating, but Voracek helps your power play. He can pass. Like some teams need passers.
Yeah,
Winnipeg's one of them. It doesn't mean other teams don't need passers too. But that's the kind of player you would want, right?
Yeah, and again, we've talked about the Panthers and the Oilers and teams that are struggling. You know, early on this season. Mm-hmm. The Flyers aren't really. When have you ever heard the term rebuild in Philly? Right,
never. But you can. That's a team that's always seems to be willing to make a move, whether and sometimes even a panicky move, whether or not it's the right move to make.
So that would make me think that they are interested in moving. I mean, Mike Richards and Jeff Carter were both shipped out, and so I mean, are you going to see them do something like that where they ship Giroux out, maybe ship Voracek out? And, you know, I agree with Rich. A lot of teams would take those guys because I have to believe that those guys – I don't think you go from point-a-game players to all of a sudden just not being – I mean, there is big problems in Philly.
If Philly calls you, if Paul Holmgren calls Kevin Cheveldayoff and says, Giroux for Kane.
Yeah, well, Kevin Cheveldayoff does that likely. But if you're looking at, you know, the contracts, I think you have to take into account – what we're dealing with here. We're dealing with a team in Scott Hartnell who plays a rough and tough style and has 5 more years after this season. So you might need a big banger who can shoot and go to the net and cause trouble.
Yeah, it's from Saskatchewan.
Do you want him for 5 years? Those kind of players wear down.
Well, do you want Claude Giroux for the next 8 years?
Well, Claude Giroux is coming into his prime of his career, Drew.
Yeah, I know.
And he's been a 90-point player in the National Hockey League. You do that deal.
Let's go to break. When we come back, one final segment. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
One final segment on this Saturday afternoon here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Glory days.
You love it. Called Rapid Fire. Make you
love like a fool. Rapid Fire.
Rapid Fire for this Saturday afternoon. Veteran forward Jason Chimera has signed a 2-year, $4 million contract extension with the Washington Capitals. He has 11 points in 16 games so far this season for the Caps. What is the best attribute that Jason Chimera brings to their lineup?
Speed and forechecking ability.
I really like Jason Chimera. I like that contract. He's always a guy, you know, that he's underrated for his goal scoring. People, he's a power forward. He's a guy that can hit, and he's become more of a veteran kind of stabilizing force for the Capitals. But yeah, he's a guy. He's a good, solid player, like a third liner. That, you know, if you need to put him on the second line, he's not ideally a second liner, but like a solid, very good third liner that can contribute offensively, and he can play on my team any day of the week if I had a team.
Speed and forechecking. And provides a nice leadership there. I like that contract.
We can only hope that one day, Ezzy, you do have a team that you can manage of your own. I'd be on board
with
that.
Yeah, I think I'll be GM of the New York Yankees.
You and Costanza. On Thursday night, Florida Panthers goaltender Tim Thomas returned to Boston for the first time since his acrimonious departure from the Bruins franchise. Upon being acknowledged on the Jumbotron, he received a standing ovation from the Bruins fans. Are you surprised he received such a positive ovation given the circumstances of his departure?
No, because remember when we had Jack Edwards on the show? We've had him on the show several times, but he talked about kind of the most popular Boston athletes of all time. And he said that Tim Thomas, you know, had the chance to be up there. He's obviously not up there, but the Stanley Cup win, the Vezina trophies, all of that. He was a really popular guy in Boston, so I'm not surprised about that at all.
You win, you can do whatever you want.
You win a cup, you get cheered.
You win a cup, you do whatever you want.
Fair enough.
And that's, I mean, that really, isn't that what it boils down to, guys? For the most part, if you don't go completely overboard, and you know, he left the team and he didn't go to the, but he didn't say something like overly offensive. He didn't go Richie Young incognito on anybody in seriousness. And so if you win, the Bruins hadn't won a cup since, what, 74?
Sure.
So, and 72, I believe.
It's not like he left
the Flyers won 74.
And it's not like he left the Bruins, you know, high and dry. They had a guy named Tuukka Rask behind him, and he stepped in there pretty well.
That's right.
Tonight, speaking of Boston, the Toronto Maple Leafs returned to Boston for the first time since their epic Game 7 collapse last season.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, I know. I think we should actually just talk. We should call some Leafs fans and talk to them about that for the next five minutes.
They're still cheering at Leaf Square over there.
The Leafs have 22 points so far this season. The Bruins have 19. Looking at the current rosters of the two teams, in the next 5 years, which of the two teams has a brighter future?
It's a good question, Drew. I like that you put that in the show plan today, because I underestimated the Toronto Maple Leafs. I didn't pick them to make the playoffs this year, and early on in the season, a week ago, they were, you know, first or second in the East. They're still up there, but they've fallen a little bit. But they have some injuries right now, and James Van Riemsdyk, I know, is going to be playing some center because of injuries to Dave Boland and Tyler Bozak, but it's a tough one because the Bruins have a bright future, but, you know, you've traded Sagan and some younger guys to be better now, so I don't know. Going forward, Kessel's under contract long-term, Van Riemsdyk. I might say Toronto's better looking, and throw in Bernier. There's a lot of youth there. Phaneuf isn't an old by any stretch of the imagination, so I'll say the Leafs.
5 years, still the Bruins, because you have Krejci and Bergeron up the middle. Those guys aren't old. You have Rask in between the pipes for the next however long. The only issue there is Chara. That's the one issue there. But you look at Lucic, young guy, Marchand, young guy. Great core they have there. You know, they have some veterans, but they can replace those veterans with signings and such, like they did, like they've done with Horton.
And they hope Dougie Hamilton emerges to replace what Chara's probably got 2 or 3 years left. So hopefully, you know, Hamilton emerges.
Krug.
Yep.
You know, they got young talent on the back end. They'll make moves. They're bold. They have money to spend. I still think the Bruins, but the Leafs are headed in the right direction.
Pittsburgh Penguins forward Pascal Dupuis has recently come to endorse his own line of Dijon mustard. Called Dupuis Dijon, the mustard is being billed as new and improved and back just in time for the playoffs.
I can't see if Remus is signaling how much time we have left or that he wants mustard, because if people don't know, Remus has an obsession with mustard.
Loves French's.
Only French's, though.
Who else on the Pittsburgh Penguins is deserving of their own food product, and what would that product be?
Oh, that's a tough one. You got a lot of characters on that team. Like, could you do something with like Tanner Glass, maybe having his own glass company or something? Having his own glasses, like Tanner Glasses. Tanner's Glasses or something? I don't know. But you,
how am I going to beat that?
You've got, I don't know. I mean, you've got, you know, what about, okay, I got one for you. What about like Chris Letang's Tang? Like, you know,
like
Tang
the,
is
like
a drink.
The orange drink?
Chris's, or you could call it Chris's Le Tang.
Why does Remus and Ezzy spruce up for these questions? But you'd ask him about something else, eh.
Oh, yeah. No,
Remus's like, eyes, he's ready to get in here.
I'm trying to think of something involving Bo Bennett, but
I thought
can't.
So too, yeah. Bo Bennett.
Well, like, what's the French word for a donut? Those things they have in New Orleans.
It's bang.
Isn't it beignet?
Beignet?
Bang.
Bang.
Lord knows all three of you have eaten enough,
well,
you should know.
I think I know. I'm the only guy with a French immersion diploma here, so.
Yeah, but you can only speak French when you're drunk. It's really odd.
Yeah,
all the time.
All of a sudden, I become Samuel de Champlain.
Before we go to cheers and jeers, what do you guys make of the fact that Gary Lawless gave Michael Remus a tracksuit and didn't give us anything?
What tracksuit?
Gary gave Michael Remus a tracksuit.
What tracksuit?
Like Tony Soprano tracksuit?
It's the Team Canada Olympic one.
Ooh, Michael.
Yeah.
Wow.
I should have worn it today.
You know what? I could care less.
It's pretty nice.
You couldn't.
So Gary gave Remus a tracksuit. Good for him. Maybe they can go out for lunch and
you're just
and
bitter
because
Gary
out.
Blocked you on Twitter yesterday.
Gary, but Remus also gave Gary headphones, so that's maybe that's part of a trade.
There was some bartering.
Yeah. Who won?
It's too much.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And jeers.
No, not good enough.
He's a bad boy.
I never seen something stink like this.
Surprisingly not good.
We're told that Remus says we have to do cheers and jeers quickly. So, Richard, quickly.
First time in the Staples Center, watched LA Kings, and I have to say I was impressed with the fans, really into it, knowledgeable. All the stuff you hear about, oh, Southern fans not knowing things, completely untrue. Huge thumbs up to them.
Yeah. I went to a game there, sorry, like years
ago. I thought
it was quick.
Here.
Why are you talking right now?
Yeah. Richie also partied with Victoria Beckham, so he had a lot of fun with that. I'm going to cheer Adam Party. He gets beer spilt on him. And guy takes his helmet and he doesn't react. He doesn't go all Ron Artest. He was on the round table yesterday joking about it. You know, good spirit. You know, Adam Party, good Newfoundlander. He gets my cheer for keeping his composure.
I'm going to wrap up cheers and jeers by jeering the NHL schedule makers. The Hockey Hall of Fame game should be a marquee matchup on a Saturday night. Maybe not necessarily in Toronto, but at least in Toronto or Montreal. It should not be a Friday night game at the Air Canada Center between the Leafs and the Devils. Make it a bigger issue of it. No other league would bury it on a Friday night like the NHL just did. That's it for today and the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A big thank you to our guests, Jason Arnott and David Pollock of the San Jose Mercury News. A big thank you to our sponsors, the Certified General Accountants Association of Manitoba, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, the Linden Market Dental Center, and the Chill Bar and Grill. In case you missed any of the show, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, subscribe, and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. It'll also be available on tsn1290.ca and on illegalcurve.com. Follow us on Twitter at illegalcurve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and the website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com. Wednesday night, NHL midweek here on TSN 1290. Next Saturday, 8 a.m. start time for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. For producer Remus and producer Tim, for Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
You've been listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
Catch the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca.